Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. Once part of the ATA tribe, you'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we will be talking to one Wes Anderson. Wes is the founder of Smart Animal Training Systems LLC and the inventor and patent holder on the Pet Tutor System for training and enrichment. He holds degrees in electrical engineering, statistics, and has been involved in neuroscience research for many years. But his passion for positive reinforcement methods developed over 14 years in the study of animal training and behavior modification. Wes has worked as a volunteer with a prison-based service dog program, where he became known for working with the challenging behavior cases. In addition, he has taught pet dog classes for several years, specializing in aggression cases. His education with animal training has included workshops, videos, and books by positive trainers such as Ken Ramirez, Ken McCourt, Kathy Sadeo, Chirag Patel, Melina DeMartini, Kay Lawrence, Bob Bailey, and many others. It was during a Bob Bailey chicken camp that the spark for the idea of using advanced technology in positive training was born. Bob explained how Animal Behavior Enterprises, ABE, used a variety of over 500 automated feeders to increase trainer productivity and address difficult training scenarios. This idea led to the concept that the application of smart technology to training could bring more powerful tools and improve training productivity to the positive training world. Wes's company's mission is to create a new family of innovative positive reinforcement products. The mission is smart technology for positive training, with a vision of making obsolete other technologies designed for punishment. These products provide pet parents and trainers new, dynamic ways of addressing behavioral issues, novel ways to positively reinforce training and creating mentally stimulating games. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome one Wes Anderson to the show today, who's patiently waiting by in Indianapolis. Wes, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Ryan. Thank you for the lovely introduction. I really appreciate that. I'm excited to join you today.
Yeah, and absolutely thrilled to have you here with us at Animal Training Academy. So thank you for making time to hang out with us. And the Pet Tutor is something that I've been aware of for many years. I've got one of those Manaminders things in the background, which we've been so grateful for in the positive reinforcement training community over the lifespan of it. But you've come along and really leveraged some new technologies to create the Pet Tutor, and I've heard nothing but amazing things about it.
Great. I'm very pleased. And, you know, I would acknowledge the wonderful breakthrough work that Dr. Sophia Yen did in the invention of Manners Minder. I think at the time it came out, it was very revolutionary. And I hope to continue to build on that foundation of automating the positive reinforcement process.
Yeah, what an exciting area. I just have this vision of the future where my jobs and positive reinforcement trainers' jobs are obsolete because they're just like a camera and an automatic feeder, and it does the training for you. But anyway.
Well, you know, and I think of this a lot like, you know, has happened in other technologies. You know, if you think about it, the camera technology is really advanced, but photographers are still needed. As Gene Donaldson had referred to us as the tool makers, I think it's really the art and science of animal training and behavior. I think we're going to need that for many years to come. So I don't see this supplementing or in any way obviating the need for trainers. I think it's just another way for trainer to be more productive and efficient in addressing issues that are very, very challenging sometimes given scenarios. So it's really just another way to become a better trainer, I believe.
Yeah, and I mean, so many different applications which we're going to talk about today. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing if we're helping more animals and we can help more pet owners as well, and we can keep more animals in homes and help exotic right. animals at wildlife parks. And so all positive stuff. Hey, Wes, in your bio, we mentioned how the idea of the pet tutor came about because of your time spent training chickens mm-hmm. with Bob Bailey. Yeah. Can you unpack this story more for us?
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure that your audience is pretty familiar with Bob Bailey, but he is just one of the most outstanding trainers on the planet today. In terms of experience, he's, it's said, trained approximately 20,000 animals from across 140 species, literally from cockroaches to killer whales. The Navy's first director of the dolphin program. His credentials just go on and on. But I was very fortunate to go through a series of his chicken camps, chickens being very difficult and challenging in many ways, and will teach you good timing and reinforcement, rate of reinforcement issues, it will make you a much better trainer. So I went through the workshops, it's been a few years ago, and during one of the sessions, he was talking about the Spy Cat program. And as some of your listeners may be aware, many of the projects at ABE, Animal Behavior Enterprises, did were for the National Security Agency or the Central Intelligence Agency, very clandestine operations using animals in one way or another. And one of the animals was for cats. And you could think about back in the time, this was, you know, in the 40s and 50s, two guys outside the Russian embassy, you know, are chatting away. And here comes a little kitty and sets down next to them with a microphone. They don't know that. And that's the idea of a spy cat. If they could, these cats could be guided with ultrasound, and they trained them with ultrasound, and actually used feeders to navigate a course and train them directionally. They could train them with downstays. One of the big challenges, though, is because, as was true for much of the work that ABE did, they were open fields, so they weren't, in a home or in a cage. These were animals free and roaming in the ocean, in the air, on the land, and so they could encounter anything in the environment. Well, you don't want your microphone to go running off because there was a loud noise or because a dog come running by. So what they did in ABE, and they had, in addition to the 500 plus feeders that you mentioned, electronic feeders, Bob called them, they had a staff of full-time trainers. I think to the point earlier, you know, it's a mixture of technology and trainers. They had about 40 to 50 trainers on staff. And these trainers would be going in and out of the building, walking or carrying different types of animals. And so there was a lot of traffic to counter-condition the cats to these environmental stimuli. They set up a system to automatically reinforce them. When somebody walked by, it would reinforce the cat. And that was the beginning. They could get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of repetitions without the need for this manual, redundant procedure. So you could let automation do that. It was a good fit for automation. And so at the time I thought, wow, somebody's going to really take up on this. Think of where we're at today with smartphones and the technology we have today. And Bob and his team were doing this, you know, decades ago. But it didn't happen. And I waited and waited and didn't see it. So I was aware of, the Manners Minder treat and train product, but I didn't see any improvements technologically with that. So I thought, I'm in. I believe deeply. I'm a crossover trainer. So I will admit that I've originally trained my dog as I thought I had to with punishment. But when I found out about positive reinforcement, I embraced it wholeheartedly. My commitment now is to bring technology to that field. So I've just been really impressed with what people have been doing with Pet Tutor so far. And but my vision is still to try to catch up with what Bob and ABE were doing, because they were decades in advance of where things are at. But I think they were pointing in the right direction. This brilliant blend of technology and deep understanding of animal behavior and learning theory is a really powerful combination. So that's where we're headed, is to try to follow on that legacy that Bob has left us.
And so your background is engineering statistics.
Yeah, I originally was an electrical engineer. I actually worked several years as an electrical engineer. I did hardware and software design. And then I got very interested in statistics and went back to school and got an advanced degree in biostatistics. And I was a biostatistician for a pharmaceutical firm developing compounds, drugs for neuroscience, diabetes, a number of other products. And so I also have a deep interest in biology and in the science of biology at the molecular level. I worked with biochemists and biologists to try to understand what's going on in the human body. And so it kind of bleeds over into the neuroscience of learning theory as well. And so we know that, you know, a lot of what's going on in terms of fear or operant conditioning is because of these circuits in the brain that are being strengthened, whether in animals or in humans. So it really kind of combines all my interests together. In electrical engineering, I still do a lot of the programming. I love to program. I do a lot of the real-time programming controls. I try to keep my hands in the neuroscience a little bit. I still study that on the side. I don't do that anymore. I'm full-time president for Smart Animal Training Systems. It's kind of the blending of everything that I've enjoyed doing now.
So we've had this trainer who in a previous life was a statistician on the show before. Lena DiMartini was a statistician.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't had someone like you on the show before, though. So so you've got this background in electrical engineering, advanced degree, you said, in statistics,
yeah, uh-huh.
which blows my mm-hmm. mind because my mind's not mathematically oriented at all.
Yeah.
And then neuroscience. And so where did the animal training fit into this? Where did you suddenly go?
I started off with my pet dog, and I got very interested in, many years ago, I had a pet dog. And so I was at a class and we were doing a punishment approach, and, it didn't feel good to me. And finally, I started getting interested in obedience competition, and we got to a point in the process to do obedience competition regarding the retrieve. And I was told the only way you can do a retrieve is to do an ear pinch, which is a terrible, very antiquated method to induce punishment to get the animal to bite the dumbbell. And I told my instructor, I'm not going to do it. He gave me a little, like, two sentences. Well, here's how you could do it with positive, but it'll never work. And I thought, oh, come on. So I went out and did research, and I found a local trainer here in Indianapolis, Laura Ball, who's really very highly accomplished trainer, works for Karen Pryor Academy. She's one of the instructors there. And she put me on to a positively reinforced method for the retrieve. And when I joined my class, I probably had, if I must say so, the best dog there in terms of the retrieve. Some of them, using, as you would imagine, the punishment base, were even afraid of the dumbbell. So that convinced me that this method had something. And so that started a very long interest in learning all I could about positive reinforcement and behavior science. I started with workshops and read books and videos, and I've been to many, many clicker expos, PPG, ABDT, I still think of myself as very much of a student. I just awe at people. Like, if you've ever seen Chirag Patel work, he is like a magician. his moves and his understanding of behavior are something I aspire to. But what I can do is try to provide he and others that that are doing training tools to do things that they would like to do. So that's kind of how I've gotten into this role of integrating training and behavior and technology. I still love technology deeply, but I think of myself as a student of behavior. I don't profess to be an expert at all.
Well, it seems like you've kind of just every time in your life when something has come along that's piqued your interest, just dived as deep as you can into learning about it. Would that be an accurate way of describing your...
Yeah. I'm headlong into everything that I've enjoyed in my life. And I enjoy getting up. I'm so excited to get up every day.
It's awesome. And in Indianapolis, well, I've got a lot of Animal Training Academy members from that part of the world. It seems like there's a lot of good stuff going on in that area. Was your locality and being able to connect with those trainers an important part of where you are today, do you think?
Well, other than Laura, there weren't very many trainers in the area at the time. Now, this goes back, my original interest in this is probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years back when I started trying to study seriously. I couldn't find anyone, not very many locally. So I started going to the conferences and getting books. That's where I went to many of the Clicker Expos and APDT conferences, and I learned a lot at the conferences. And then I also volunteered in a pet dog training program. We specialized in dogs with behavior issues, special needs dogs that were reactive and aggressive toward dogs and humans. And I kind of took a liking to working on the rehab of animals like that. And I have an example to share later where I think technology could be a big assist in that. So that's been an area that I've enjoyed behavior mod, but really the resources at the time in Indianapolis, at least what I could find, were pretty limited. Now, I think it's probably grown since then.
And so you went to this chicken camp with Bob Bailey, and he kind of told you about still even in 2019, mind-blowing stories of some of the things they got up to. And then you said you waited and waited, but nothing came about. So you took it upon yourself. Can you share with us what the first ever pet tutor looked like? how did the whole first design process go? And
well, you know, I'm a big believer in listening to what people have to say. And so I started and I pulled together a team. First, to just talk to trainers and say, what is it that you like or don't like? And the product that was available at the time had limitations. There were issues mechanically, jamming, noise. People said, just if you make something, it's got to be jam proof. It's got to be quiet. And then they wanted some additional advanced technology pieces. So we started just by talking to people. I mean, I do training and I do behavior, and I could just have sat in a room and kind of thought of what I would like it to be. But actually in talking to people, we got a lot of good input. And that's still one of my favorite things to do, is to talk to my customers and to go to the shows. I learned so much from people. And so it started off as just research. But I like the technology. So I quickly, put together a prototype. I knew that the jamming issue had to be solved. And that was a key element, I would say. We can get into, I like the advanced technology and software, but really mechanically, if the unit jams, that's it. It really is hard if that happens in the middle of a training session. And so we worked on that and came up with our bristle design, which is virtually jam resistant and allows you to put in a wide range of treats, even semi-moist products like meat. Bob Bailey said that his pet tutor was a little gunked up because he had put meat through it to train birds of prey. Ken McCourt, who's taught at Wolf Park here in Indiana, just up the road from us, actually, he told me that he was training somewhere a leopard to hold position with a zoo, and he had put meat in his. Now, I do not recommend that. It's pretty messy, and you better clean it out, but it's been done. So we really worked on the mechanics of it. You know, that we got to get that right, and then we started adding the technology in. can. And I started off with PVC pipe and wire and tape. You know, it was a typical prototype.
I would like to have seen that one. Do you have photos of that?
I'm sorry.
Do you have photos of the original prototype?
I still have the original, and I thought about pulling those out. They're pretty interesting contraptions.
Oh, I'd love to see them. We can potentially share those photos. So tell us about the Pet Tutor in 2019. So if someone purchased the latest model with all the latest additions, what would they be getting?
Yeah. So again, our mission is to continuously innovate and add new products, new features, new capabilities. So whatever you see today, we'll probably have new things available in the future. I try to make sure that we don't obsolete what we've had in the past. So we first started selling at the beginning of 2014. We actually debuted at the end of 2013 at APDT in Spokane. And we've been looking for ways to make improvements. At the time, we didn't have Bluetooth and our unit did not talk to a smartphone. So that's our generation one. People wanted to be able to use phone apps and control multiple feeders at the same time. And we knew we needed to add wireless technology, a different type of wireless that could talk to phones and tablets. So that was our generation two. But the technology for Bluetooth was very limited in range at the time, typically about 40 feet or so, which will work in some applications. But certainly if you're doing outdoor work, agility or field work, you need much more than that. So that led to the generation three, which is what we have available today. And that is a new high powered Bluetooth. The range between it and a phone or tablet is about 100 to 200 feet line of sight with no interruptions. And it will penetrate some walls, just depends on what the walls are made of, but it can go through walls so you can go out of sight. And then our handheld remote will go up to 500 feet line of sight, which I find exciting. We're starting to see people that are competing in field dog trials, which is, historically been a place where people use a lot of punishment. So we actually have people starting to use the Pet Tutor for long distance work in field dog trial stuff.
Sounds a little bit more high tech than my Manners Minder. So if I was wanting to upgrade to a Pet Tutor, where do I go to get one? And I know there's different ways to do that depending on where you are in the world. And what kind of budget should we be looking at to get one of these?
Yeah. So the website is Pet Tutor, PetTutor, PetTutor.biz. And we direct ship only to the U.S. and Canada right now. We do have a distributor in Australia, though. Polite Paws, Lisa Hilliard, outside of Sydney, is doing distribution for Australia and in that area. And we get lots of requests for distributors. One of the things that we're committed to is customer service. So I don't want to sell in front of our get ahead of our customer service support. And so what we require from anyone that's interested in distributing, if you have someone that's interested, we'd love to talk, especially someone that has a mission that's in line with ours in regard to positive reinforcement. But we do require that somebody in another country that would like to distribute for us be willing to do the customer support. That means, be local, answer questions. It is technology, so sometimes people forget to turn on their Bluetooth and they need a little help, how to, make sure their phone's connecting properly. And then if there is a need to replace or repair something, we want to have those parts local in country, so you don't have to hassle with that. Having said that, we have customers all over the world because they're using freight forwarders or friends to forward units to them. But then that doesn't give them the local support. Everything's fully warranted wherever you're at. Wherever you're at, you'd have to cover the postage for that. So only direct to Canada and the U.S. And Australia. And the feeder itself, the Pet Tutor, you can build a system that you would like. The other thing that we did is we gave it three different mounting options. So you can hang it. There's a handle. So people have put it on a pulley system, like in a kennel, and string it up in the air. Or like that example with the leopard, it was run up in the air, so it was out of reach of the animal. There's a floor base, and then there's an attachment to go on the outside of the crate so it delivers into the crate. The feeder itself is $299, and then you could use that in your phone, or you could get one of the mounts. And then our smart clicker, which is a relatively new product, you can add that. It has a tilt sensor in it. And with that, you can trigger the feeder without pushing the button. So if you could imagine, if you put it on your shoe and you're doing a procedure with an animal, like a vet procedure or a grooming procedure, and your hands were busy, if you wiggle your foot, it would dispense a treat. So we've had customers like Ken McCork told me he uses it to shoot when he's trimming the hoof on his horse. He'll put carrots in the pet tutor in front of the horse, and then he goes behind and he can wiggle his foot while he's got both hands holding the hoof and doing the trim operation. So that's pretty handy. And you can create games with that too, where an animal can touch something that has it and that will trigger the feeder. And those are all options you can add to the base feeder.
Cool. So you can buy all of those. Like you kind of go to the website and pick and choose and design your
product. Yeah, it's kind of a la carte. So, you know, we have customers will buy just the feeder, and you can actually set it on top of a crate if you wanted to use it that way, or hang it. I've used it like took a Velcro strap and attached it to my dishwasher so it drops on the floor. So just with the feeder only, you could do that. But if you wanted to set it out in an open area where there was nothing to hang it from, you'd want the floor base, or if you prefer like a crate mount, a lot of people use that. So the mounting options have been very popular too.
It's kind of like a GoPro for pet feeders.
I like that analogy. That is a really good analogy, Ryan. Yes, that's right. You can start with the basic camera, but if you want to do all the cool stuff, you add the accessories.
Attach it to your helmet.
Right. That's so you right.
Reinforce your dog while you're surfing.
Yeah, go underwater. We don't do underwater yet. But
yeah, that'd be cool. Put some fish in there.
Yeah. Wouldn't it?
So I've just paid for my Karen Pryor dog training certification, and that's emptied my animal training savings account. So I have to change it to change the name of that account to Pet Tutor and start saving up to upgrade my well, Phoebe absolutely loves her manners minor, so I can imagine how crazy she's going to be about her Pet Tutor. Hey, thanks for sharing everything so far, Wes. We love hearing about people's behavior odysseys, as we like to call them here in Animal Training Academy. So thank you very much. Moving forward, though, I'm excited to invite you to share with the listeners of the show some stories from your journey with the pet tutor so far. When we connected, one exciting story you mentioned to me was how the pet tutor is being used with people that have severe disabilities.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I have a special interest in the area of service dog training. I've been a volunteer for, gosh, I guess it's 13 or 14 years now in a prison-based service dog program here in Indiana called ICAN, Indiana Canine Assistant Network. We train service dogs for those with physical disabilities, like someone in a wheelchair, that sort of thing. So I've always been really interested in that community. I'm still active in it. I still help with the service dog training. But up until now, we really not anything for the client. So we do have pet tutors that are in service dog programs in various countries, and they're being used in different ways as part of the training of the dog, the initial training by the service dog trainer. But we've not really worked directly with the recipient of those service dogs, the client with the disability. We were approached by a gentleman who is a quadriplegic. He has only the ability to move his head. And he said, I want to interact with my dog. It is his service dog, Ellie. His name is Buddy, a really amazing individual. He used to be an F-18 fighter pilot instructor. Just incredibly super guy. But he was in an accident. And so he's has only the ability to move his head. We also knew that we wanted to mount the pet tutor on his wheelchair. So we came up with a way to mount the pet tutor on his wheelchair and deliver a treat. And then we developed a way to wire our wireless remote into his wheelchair control. So he has an electric control system and he can move his head and steer the wheelchair and then stop and give his dog a cue and then deliver the treat by a single head move, by a quick head move. And so I am super excited about that. We've since picked up more people. We're starting to get requests now for that. It's the mounting system. The pet tutor's been, we're just using the standard pet tutor, but what we're prototyping now are the mounts and the custom interfaces, because wheelchairs come in so many different shapes, sizes, and interfaces. I want to make a package that is easily adapted to the chair, both for mounting and for control. Our initial target has been those with severe disabilities, but I think if we get that done well, then we can handle a range of disabilities. So someone that has maybe some weak hand movement, we can come up with a way that works for them. So I'm very committed to developing that package. It's just in prototype right now.
So help us picture this in our mind. Whereabouts in the example that you just described to us, whereabouts on the wheelchair is the tutor mounted?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say that we're still trying to answer that question. We're picking up more people now that actually have the pet tutor on the wheelchair and are starting. We're keeping it a small test group. My initial thought was to mount it on the side of the chair. That has two problems. One, if you've seen these electric wheelchairs, there's not much room when you go through a doorway. Mounting a feeder on the side of the chair causes a potential interference issue. But number two, Buddy, because of the severity of his injury, is not able to rotate his head very much. He can move it up and down, but like twisting his neck sideways, he couldn't turn sideways to look at the dog. So he couldn't look over his shoulder. And he wanted eye-to-eye contact. He wanted to be able to see his service dog in the eye and look at it. So he wanted it down on the foot pedal between his feet. Now, I thought, well, I didn't think of that. That was Buddy's idea, but we fashioned the mount to go there. Now, we've since been talking to other people that would like it mounted in a different place on the chair. But we've had a couple people say they like that. And I think from a bonding standpoint, that seems like a good spot. You think the dog has to walk up. They've got eye contact. They've got the olfactory sense coming off of the person in the chair. So the dog's just getting a lot of positive associations directly with the person. But we'll do whatever people ask. We'll try to make it a universal mount. But that's where it's at today, is setting on the foot plate.
And so Buddy's going along and he's using his head to move his wheelchair where he wants it to go. He has to stop to control the pet tutor?
Yeah. So what he did, and we actually have some public videos on YouTube, Ryan, so I could send you those links if you would like. And Buddies, we have his approval to send those out. He's got a couple that are really nice that show that. That's exactly. Now, there is a control box on the chair that we didn't, the head controls. So he's got buttons. He can move his head and bump these head controls. That's just one method that people with severe disabilities have for accessibility on a chair. But there's a mode where you can steer it. Now, he was using our app. Because we have an app on Android and iOS, he was using the app. But I said, okay, Buddy, he bought the pet tutor and started using it. Show me how you trigger it. Well, in order to move his head, he started doing these head movements. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It took 7 head movements. You can appreciate, as a trainer, the time delay. You know, you've given a cue, now you want to trigger. That was because of the complexity of working through the phone. So that's when we developed a direct interface. So I know we're going to connect it directly into the unit. So as soon as he stops the unit, he switches over. He can stop you'll see it in the video. He'll stop the chair and he switches into pet tutor. And then at that point, all he has to do is one quick head move. He's got a button below his chin and that immediately triggers the feeder. And that's what we want to preserve too, having a sense for the needs for training. You know, Bob instilled, that's one of the three main principles of Bob Bailey's Chicken Camp, is timing. And so that's got to be superlative to have good training. So we'll work on those mechanisms, but that's how he does it. And that's how we're trying to do it. We'll be looking at other people.
Was it Bob Bailey that said the three most important aspects are timing, and timing?
Well, I'm sure that was timing, rate of reinforcement, and criteria. Those were the three that he beat into us. Certainly, timing is probably one of the, the rest of it doesn't matter if your timing is lousy. Yeah, you're late. That was, you know, Bob had this box, it's, you know, the timing, and, you know, you're late. That was, that was famous in his chicken camps.
So I'm excited to see the videos, and we'll put the videos on the write-up as with all of the links. I don't know if I said that earlier. Everything's Wes has talked about today, we'll put up on the podcast write-up for you listeners to easily go and find. But Wes, maybe some people driving their cars listen to this episode on their way to work, and they might, you know, get distracted by other things in their lives and not find it to the video. So one more thing I'm curious about, and for those who watch the videos, go watch it in the videos, but for those that don't make it, what kind of cues was he using for the dogs? He'd be in his wheelchair, he would stop. What kind of cues could he give?
Yeah, well, you know, and this is really one of the issues. I'm excited too, just in general, for the service dog community. And we were actually very fortunate. The Assistance Dog International Conference was just held in Indianapolis, and we were given the opportunity to be one of the sponsors there. So I got to talk to several service dog trainers. And for those clients that have severe enough disabilities that they have, delivering a treat is, like for Buddy, was impossible to manually do that. And some people have very limited hand motions, and so if they try to pick up a treat cup, they could spill it. The dog might jump up in their lap to try to get. So keeping that reinforcement history up once the animal is trained and placed is a challenge. So it's also not only for the client, but to keep up the strength of the behavior for the animal, to keep that reinforcement history up. And so I think that's another element of why it's important to have this for this particular set of clients that are in wheelchairs.
And what cues could he give? Was he just...
I'm sorry, you did say the cues. Yeah, so the cues are pretty standard cues. Sit, Ellie come, recalls. You know, they were cues that he was reinforcing. Now, I don't know if he started to train new behaviors. I would like to see that. I think that would be really exciting. Maybe with the help of a trainer, to let someone with that with a severe disability like that do training, just like another pet dog owner, another owner, to add a new behavior. But these were all prior learned behaviors established by the service dog program. So recalls, sits, downs, that kind of thing.
And did he control those via the...
Oh, yeah. He could speak. He could speak.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So he, although his speech is a little broken, but he can speak. Now, we did get contacted by someone that is quadriplegic without voice. And she, I'm told, no, we're not working with her yet. I don't know if we will, but she controls everything with eye movement. So I've actually saw a demonstration video where she could use her eyes and move on an iPad and give the cue. So, like, you know, Fluffy, come. That would she could do that with her eye movement. Now, for her, I think then we would have to come up with an interface through the iPad. It sounds like that would be the only way she could interface with the world, but I think we could make that happen because we're already on the app, and I think it might be a fairly small step. But yeah, for Buddy, he could deliver the cue verbally. Yeah, he was still verbal.
We all know the control is a primary reinforcer, and I'm just imagining giving that control back to someone, to Buddy, and this woman you're talking about must just be the most amazing gift.
Yeah. When he told me he wanted to interact with his dog, I just thought, we're going to make this happen. I am not going to let this one go, because it means so much to him, and I think the bond between people and their animal is so important. And it just and I've heard that from others too, that that have started using the pet tutor on their wheelchairs. So it's a passion of mine, and you know, it's another ability that we enjoy as, you know, healthy people. walking around human beings, you know, that we can interact with our animals and kind of some of us take it for granted. And I don't think it has to. That's where I think one of the areas of technology can step in and make a difference.
It consistently marvels me that we can communicate so effectively with another species without the spoken language. So I can imagine that for these individuals that might even have that lacking, just must be so rewarding. So on behalf of the world, thank you for the work that you're doing to help these individuals.
My pleasure.
So are there other examples from the service dog area?
Sure, yeah. We do have pet tutors in a number of service dog programs. Guide Dogs for the Blind is one that's been using our units. Michelle Pouillet, when she was there, phenomenal freestyle trainer, very, very accomplished trainer in the service dog world. One of the applications that I understand that they used, that they had a guide dog that was going to flunk out because it was barking too much in the car. So car rides were very stimulating. And so they could put the pet tutor in the back of the car and deliver treats remotely. So I think they had a trainer in the front seat that could trigger at the appropriate time when they're going through a highly stimulating area. And they were able to reduce the barking to zero in that and recover the service dog. So it was really neat that we got a dog that was on the bubble and got him back into the program.
I had my manners minder in the back seat of my car with the remote stuck with, I don't know if you call it blue tack over there, like putty to my dashboard next to my radio. So it's the same as me pushing a button. Have you had many other, because obviously driving a car, we want our eyes to be on the road. have you had any other stories about people using it effectively to manage behavior whilst being highly distracted by things like driving?
Yeah. So one that I love, I almost forgot about this until you just asked the question, but a lady said that, I don't know, but the dog, when she would hit a bump, okay, she's driving along and they'd hit a bump, the dog would start barking when they hit a bump in the road. And so she had our remote, which has an accelerometer in it, which we use as a sensor for tilt or action. So if you put our remote, we call it the smart clicker, if you bump it, it will trigger the feeder. So she put the remote into the drink cup in her car, put it into tilt mode. So every time she hit a bump, it automatically triggered the feeder. So she didn't have to do anything. She could concentrate everything. That's a really neat example of technology, you know, closing that loop automatically. So she didn't have to focus on anything else. And then we also have her barking. We do have a program that senses the bark and reinforces for quiet. And now that it depends on how noisy it is in the car, if that would work. But we do have the program goes into an automatic timed interval mode with randomization. So it can deliver over random intervals. And then if the dog barks, it withholds for a penalty period and then restarts again. It uses negative punishment for the bark. And then it restarts again when it's quiet. And that's been used pretty effectively in signal dog settings.
It's smart training, you could say, with the person.
Yes,
the car, right. Yeah. The dog and the bumps. So tell us more about applications of this sensing for the barking, because we didn't get to talk about that before when we were talking about the pet tutor and its functions, but I'm assuming that that's something that a lot of people are interested in and purchase the product for.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's important to look at the conditions or the source of the bark and the reason for the bark. And so there's, you know, barking's obviously a big issue, and there's a huge market out there for punishment-based approaches. So there's maybe different ways to approach this from a behavioral standpoint. The one that we have used that's worked pretty well, even from our Generation 1 product, is to listen for the bark. Like I said, so the protocol would be, you know, continue to treat. So you set it up in a timed interval mode and it's treating, dispensing the meal. And then if the dog barks, it withholds it for some extended period. And those are programmable. So in the extended period, it has to be long enough the animal can sense it. Oh, okay, I'm not getting any treats. Pretty soon when it starts back up, when they're quiet, It will reinforce them for being quiet. Another approach that I learned about, it was actually a name that came up in chicken camp, and I remembered it, and our paths crossed, and I'm really glad they did. Dr. Eduardo Fernandez is well known in the behavior world. He's a doctor in the field, and he told me about a methodology or technique called a non-contingent reinforcement, NCR, and I become a believer in that. It's a simpler, you don't even need to sense the bark. Many people think you have to, and for at least for some of the cases I've seen, you don't. And we've been able to use that in a kennel setting. Now, our algorithm, it's not precise enough to distinguish who barks. So when you get into a kennel operation, that can become problematic because you don't know if it's the dog that you got the pet tutor set up on or another one that's barking. So that doesn't work very well because of that scenario. But we've also had the pet tutor used in kennel operations using NCR, and it is pretty amazing. We've got a video online showing that. There's a kennel here in town that trains animals for medical alert, low blood sugar detection, seizure prediction. They use only shelter and rescue dogs. So they come in bouncing off the walls, excited, barking. They set them up in the kennel with a pet tutor, put it on the timed interval mode with randomization, and that's the way they get their meals. And after a meal or two of that, they're much calmer in the crate. And there's another, Susquehanna Service Dogs has a great example of reducing the barking in their kennel out in Pennsylvania, I think. They've used NCR. So, Dr. Fernandez explained that that's been used with human children too that have self-destructive behaviors, that NCR can reduce unwanted behaviors through this random reinforcement schedule without actually paying any attention to the behavior. I don't really understand how it works. And he told me that in the scientific circles, there's a lot of debate, you know, is it operant? Is it classical? Is it, you know, why is this working? But it does seem to work in practice.
Yeah, and we've had Dr. Fernandez on the podcast before.
Oh, great.
Very aware of my lack of systematic data keeping in my animal training, which I'm grateful for, very grateful for. And I think the threads in our members-only Facebook group about NCR have been some of the most popular ones as the idea and the conversations about it are ones that are very appealing to people. And still lots of areas for everyone to learn. And I think so that's really neat to hear about that. And just to make sure I understand, so the dog, for example, the medical alert dogs would be put in a crate. Doesn't matter what they're doing. It doesn't matter what behavior they're doing. The pet tutor is set up to randomly just distribute food at random intervals.
Yeah, and the way it's written, the program, you tell it how long and how short you want the interval to be, and then it randomly draws a number. The computer randomly generates a number. So, for instance, if you wanted it to drop a treat between 10 and 20 seconds, it would dispense a treat, and then maybe the next would come out 11 seconds, and then the one after that might be 18 seconds, and then back to 13 seconds. It would bounce around in between those limits. So when you set it up, when the user sets it up, you specify the limits, and then the machine just runs until it's out of food. And that's the way they were delivering the meal for the animals.
That's really exciting, and I want to learn more about that. But we've got some other examples and some applications of the pet tutor that we discussed talking about today, and you've already mentioned some of them, and that was with leopards, birds of prey. Mm-hmm. You said that it's been used with an umbrella cockatoo. Can you expand on these stories for us?
Yeah. The umbrella cockatoo was Ken McCourt, and it was a rescued cockatoo. And whoever he rescued it from, they gave it up. Evidently, they like to cuss. And so when somebody came and knocked on the door, and I don't have a bird, I'm not that familiar, but I guess that's not unheard of for the cockatoo to learn to cuss if the owner does that. But it would, I guess, cuss quite a bit when somebody somebody came to the door. So he set the pet tutor up with, I don't know exactly what he was feeding it at the time, but he set it up on a cage. And as long as the bird wasn't cussing, it got a reinforcement. And he said he was able to reduce cussing by 90%. So, he, and Ken's himself a very accomplished trainer. I think he's trained a number of species. But that was the umbrella cockatoo. The leopard, again, that was Ken McCourt. I'm not sure exactly what he was doing. Someone told me that, had someone at the San Diego Zoo buy a unit for the honey badger. And I think they're more thinking about a way to reinforce behavior. Now, if you know about honey badgers, you don't want to put anything that's destructible in the cage with a honey badger. So they're going to figure out a way to deliver it remotely, but they're just getting started. But that's more of an enrichment application. So the animal can push our button and remote and deliver a reinforcement that way. We've had people use it with horses for like trailer loading. I've seen some videos people have shared to get horses to load into the trailer can be a problem. In the agility world, people have used it to. Now, this is a kind of an interesting element because it really blends in the theory of behavior. Michelle Puet has a great video that she did at Kluger Expo. But you can because you can deliver the treat remotely from yourself. You can use it as part of the shaping process. And that actually, as I'm sure most of you appreciate, where you deliver the treat is a part of the behavior process, shaping behavior. So, for example, if the dog's coming straight out through the weave poles in agility, they're weaving in and out, and they come out of the end of the weave poles, if trainer is running beside them a little behind, they'll want to hook. The behavior will become a hook around to the trainer to get the reinforcement. And so you can put the pet tutor in a straight line out in front of the weave poles to get a straight line behavior coming out of the weave poles. Just as an example, someone else used a Cavalletti. They were training like they do in horses, you know, running across the ground. They put the pet tutor on one side of the Cavalletti's and a Kong wobbler with our smart clicker in it. And so the dog would run back and forth through the Cavalletti's, touch the Kong wobbler, run back, get a treat, run back to the wobbler. So they're doing the Cavalletti's back and forth. I do want to mention one example about auto counter conditioning, which I don't know if you and I had a chance to talk about. Is that all right, Ryan, if I mention that? Yeah. So the I do a lot of work with the service dogs, although this isn't limited to just service dogs. And this is where I kind of an exciting idea where the animal can be trained without the need for the trainer to be there or maybe leverage a trainer. So I had a dog that was becoming very reactive to other dogs, and he was a service dog. And so we started to counter condition the presence of other dogs. It would take a lot of repetitions, and we typically, the way I'd approach it is we'd have setups requiring two people, one using a neutral or decoy dog moving, and then depending on the movement, we'd keep the reactive dog sub-threshold and then reinforce the reactive dog for staying below threshold and make a lot of positive reinforcements associated with the movement of the other dog. But I thought, hey, this might be an opportunity to automate this. And I actually talked to Lori Stevens, who's a good friend of ours. She's does a lot of Kluger Expo stuff. And Lori and I brainstormed on how to use two feeders and a toy to let the dog be automatically counter conditioned. And the way that worked is, the picture here is, and I have a video for this too, I can send you the link. The reactive dog was in a cage and had a pet tutor on the cage. And then the other dog was in an X-pen and had some ability to move. So he could move over to the toy, it was a Kong wobbler, bump it, and then that would deliver him a treat. So he was playing his game, which he's done hundreds and hundreds of times, moving back and forth between the wobbler and the feeder. The difference is that remote was set up to trigger both feeders at the same time. So when my neutral dog moved over and touched the wobbler, it simultaneously triggered both feeders. So the reactive dog was getting treated by just watching the other dog move. And I could build build up hundreds and hundreds of repetitions. It was just me. I prefer, and I think it's good if you're using automation, you need to kind of keep it supervised. So I was watching the reactive dog to make sure that we weren't getting over threshold, that, you know, I was getting the condition emotional response cues that I was looking for. And then we gradually moved the cages closer and closer. And then we then that's when I brought in an assistant and we did some setups out in stores and things like that with other dogs. So that's an area where I think automation can help. And that's kind of like what the SpyCat program did. Is just let hundreds of repetitions build up in the normal course of events, you know, without having to be there and hand deliver everything.
So might you say that the possibilities are only limited by our imagination?
Thank you. That's what I hope. That is my ultimate dream, Ryan, that technology can open up our paradigm about what's possible. You know, we're just building the Lego blocks, you know. We want you to build this beautiful thing that we hadn't even thought about. But that's where we're heading, and I see all forms of technology changing quickly on that will allow us to do that.
So one thing that I've tried to do in the past is set my GoPro up and use my app on my phone to watch Phoebe, my dog, and reinforce with the Manners Minder. Timing does become an issue there because of the lapse of the video feed to my phone. And now I've got a Wise camera on my desk, which I was hoping would solve the problem, but hasn't. Have you experimented with cameras incorporated into pet tutors?
Yeah. Well, under the Generation 2 pet tutor, we actually developed a software product that would allow you to you downloaded our app. It's called Pet Tutor RT. It's only available for the last generation product. We're kind of, I don't want to spill the beans too much, but we're kind of working on some other ideas for the future for that. But definitely internet video based is coming. It's got to be there, but it's got to be appropriate and have parameters that meet the trainer's needs. Timing is the big one. When we had the Generation 2 product, or it was still there, still available for anyone with a Gen 2, you would take it up, download the our app onto any spare phone or tablet. It turns it into a webcam, if you will. And you could point that phone or tablet then at the feeder and the animal, and it would stream the video to a remote location. And I tested with people all over the world, all over the United States and actually New Zealand, I think was maybe one of the long ones. We have a customer down there. And I did speed tests. And I have a little technique where the thing that's most important, and I think we're getting into kind of like the future, which is pretty exciting. I think possibilities are coming. But for training, you have to think about the delays. There are two parts. The animal behaves. Let's say the dog puts his butt on the ground. You're 500 miles away. How long does it take the image to arrive to you? So that's one leg of the delay, or as I call the whole thing the round trip. The second leg is your response. That includes your physical timing. So usually that's about, maybe 250 milliseconds, 300 milliseconds, somewhere in that ballpark is, you know, if a person sees an animal behave, it's going to take them that long to press the button on a clicker. But you've got the human response time. We'll just take that out of the equation for now. But the command has to go back over the internet, back to the location to trigger the feeder and to put the marker out. We did speed tests on that. With our other product, I was able to get the round trip delays down to about 0.7 seconds. That means the animal behaves 0.7 seconds later, the marker has been delivered in the room. And then the treat obviously can come a second or two after that. But you want to get that marker out sub-second. So we were able to achieve sub-second. That depended on the time of day. So the internet loads factored in. So you could measure it on, you know, Tuesday morning or Tuesday evening. It could be very different when people are jumping on the internet. Also dependent on internet speeds, but look at what's happening on the internet. We've got 5G coming, we got fiber optics, so everything is speeding up. So those delays will be shorter and shorter, but it will be the round trip. Some of those video cameras feed their video to servers on the internet that slow it down. We didn't do that. We had like a very rapid video delivery. Security cameras are notorious for that. Nest cams will have 3 to 4 second delay just on the video leg.
So I imagine that's got pretty significant applications with cases we might label as separation anxiety, for example, being able to.
Yeah. That's where I think for the positive training community is super exciting. It's like you sitting in New Zealand could train my dog in Indianapolis. You know, hey, you know, Ryan, I hear you're pretty good doing separation anxiety. Can you, take me on as a client? And, you know, you could coach me. You could say, why don't you train a little bit? Okay, let me take over. Here, let me show you what I mean. Here's how, or you know, I've got to run out to the office. Can you watch my dog for me for a little while and trigger the pet tutor? The speeds are getting there. Now, New Zealand, it's a function of how far away you are, but also where the global servers are located and how that's set up. But everything is moving us in the direction of less and less latency over the internet.
Well, we'll leave all that fun stuff up to you. And then when you've got it ready to purchase, I'm sure they'll fly out the door. But seven tenths of a second, I'm going to say that that's better than most people.
Yeah, that and that was our best result. It would typically be more like about a second or two, which I consider getting a little long. If you're sitting there training, you know, if a dog's moving very quickly, anything could happen. Now, I've seen some of these video systems that people are using to deliver a treat over the internet that are so slow, you know, just a couple of seconds delay, and it could be the difference between the dog set and the dog just jumped up on the dinner table. So, you know, anything could happen within 2 or 3 seconds. So the delay's got to get down to the sub-second level. But then we have to think about this continuum of behaviors for which different timings are appropriate. So if you have a fast-moving behavior topology, then you've got to have faster times. But if you're just maybe training for a relaxed condition, you might be able to fire off a treat, you know, every once in a while, and it's not a big deal. You know, so I think it's what you're trying to train that can make a big difference.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of behavior can happen in 7/10 of a second, let alone.
You're right. Yeah.
Another thing I've done with Phoebe is to set her up in front of a computer and had Audacity, a sound recording app on that could record wavelengths. And I might have actually used GarageBand on Mac, which would show me the volume of her bark. And then I would try to reinforce. I'll try to shape quite a bark.
That is brilliant. I love it. Yeah.
Have you experimented with anything like that, like intensity and volume of barks?
I've been looking at barks. Yeah, as a student of the bark. Yeah, as an engineer and a student of the bark. Yeah.
So if someone listening out there has or has a client, or they are themselves, or they know someone that has severe disabilities, or they have another application where it could really help someone's life, would be their strategy to get in touch with you and kind of have a conversation with you about some of those things?
Yeah, that one I'm really passionate about. We've got to get it right. It's going to take us a little while to really develop the package the way I want, or we're going to just re-engineer everyone. We can't do that. We're a small private family-owned company, and so we really can't engineer every one of these. So I'm really trying to craft a package that you can easily mount on the wheelchair and interface to a variety of different chairs. We are entertaining a handful of people that are willing to evaluate it. It's the mount and the interface. They can send a request to support@pettutor.biz, support@pettutor.biz. It would probably be best if they were in the U.S. or Canada, just because we may have to send prototypes and it won't take so long. So I think probably locale will play into it during this development period. But when we get something rolled out, then, you know, we want to make that available to a broader audience. And we're tending toward those with the severest of disabilities. So really people that need some kind of control movement control. They have the head buttons that I talked about. There are the, I think they're called puff and sip. So a person can inhale and exhale into a tube and control things. The eye movement one, I'd like to get a collection of those so I know what the electrical interface looks like to these different devices. So we can make one that's more, quote, universal. It would just plug into different types of chairs. I have a gentleman now, he's actually has multiple sclerosis, and he's deteriorating, but he still has a little bit of movement in one of his arms. So he wants a button. He wants to be able to push a button. He's got one hand that he can, that is still mobile. And so we're going to fashion, they call them ultralight. They're very, very light touch buttons that he'll strap to his arm. So I want to get a collection of people to say, yeah, this is what I need. No, I need that. So just enough to do that. So you can have them contact us at support. I won't promise anything, but we're building a small closed Facebook group right now of users. It does require they have a pet tutor, so they either have one or want to purchase a pet tutor. We will provide at no charge, at no additional charge, the mounts, the interfaces, the engineering to make it work for them.
Cool. I'm looking forward to the outcome of this as it progresses over the coming while. Yeah. Hey, sadly, we are at the final question, and you've potentially just covered some of the answer to this question already. But is there anything else that you want to share with us about your vision for the future and what you really want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years in the animal training and technology world?
Oh, yeah. I think, ultimately, I hope we can make the alternative technologies obsolete. I think the marriage of good behavior science, positive reinforcement, and technology can over time make it obvious that there's really not any need to punish. And that would be the best outcome I could imagine. And I think, for the average pet owner, if they have some a little assistance there, it can help a lot, barking or other behaviors. Trainers can help. Positive trainers will have a tool that can leverage their skills across a broader audience. And I'm really excited about the internet, as we talked about. I think, there's so many good trainers around the world, positive trainers, and to be able to touch pet owners anywhere. If you talk to people, even in the United States, they'll say, well, I live in, such and such a city, and there's no positive trainers around, so I can't get any help, from that community for my animal. So we need to break down those barriers.
Awesome. And you are creating massive ripples in that area. Hey, we just remind everyone before we finish up where they can go to find out more about the pet tutor and if they're interested in purchasing one, where they can go to do that.
PetTutor.biz, PetTutor.biz. And we also have a Facebook group, Pet Tutor. And our company, the company that makes it, is Smart Animal Training Systems. And that's, we're really committed to a platform of products. So we have in the works other accessory products that will help people do things that are challenging or difficult today. So it'll be more than just the feeder. I'll say that. We've got some exciting stuff in the pipeline.
Wonderful. And we will, of course, link to all of this in the show notes as well and try to remember all of the videos that we've talked about today and get all of that in one central location for you to listen to go and explore this product and the exciting things that are happening even more. Hey, Wes, this has been so much fun from myself and on behalf of everyone listening today. Thank you so much for coming and spending some time with us here at Animal Training Academy. It's really appreciated.
I loved it. Enjoyed it very much, Ryan. Thank you for the opportunity.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.